When I was taking classes at OSU, turning to a neighbor for help during an exam would have been considered cheating, with severe consequences for both me and my neighbor.
Well, in John Selker's stochastic hydrology class, it's not cheating, it's collaboration. And in today's episode, we're going to talk about a radical new way to deliver tests. I'm John Darbola from Oregon State University's Technology Across the Curriculum.
And I'm Stephen Roberts, and I work for both the Center for Teaching and Learning and Technology Across the Curriculum. TAC and CTL are collaborating to bring you conversations and explorations of key teaching and learning issues.
Steve and I are here with John Selker, full professor of biological and ecological engineering at Oregon State University. And in one of those serendipitous moments that I love about university life, John, you and I had a chance encounter at a local coffee shop in which you told me about your wonderful two-pen method of test taking. And I was really entranced with the simplicity of the idea. But I've never heard of this technique, and it seems so simple and obvious now that you've told me about it, that when I read your article, I was struck again about the elegance of the idea. The article that you wrote on this is in Physics Today, June 2010, and it's titled A Two-Color Twist on Color Taking. Can you tell us about how you discovered this technique?
Yeah, like many things, necessity is the mother of invention. And I was heading into an examination in a fairly high-level graduate course where I happened to intuit that about half of the students were going to absolutely fail a test, and the other half were going to find the test quite easy. But even those who were going to find it somewhat easy maybe have been challenged to explain the ideas, but I had a feeling they understood the kind of equations they needed to use. And I was in my office 5 minutes before this test and had the test written, and I decided this was not an acceptable way to walk into an examination. I wanted to have the possibility of a positive outcome for all the students and an outcome where they would not feel humiliated, where they would feel that they would be reinforced with what they had learned, and they'd learn about what they needed to further their understanding of. So I was desperate, if you will. And in that moment, I decided that I needed to be able to somehow leverage the understanding of the top students with the needs of the other students, and redesign this test into something that would both help me understand where the students were at, but also develop a sense of learning community and a positive environment for the next phases of that course. This is a midterm. So I grabbed two colors of pens. I grabbed some blue pens and I grabbed some red pens. And I walked into the course and I said, okay, it's an hour and a half course session. The first 45 minutes are going to be regular. I give you these blue pens, you do your test. And then in the next 35 minutes or so, you're going to use these red pens. And what's going to happen is I gather up the blue pens, and when you go to the red pens, now it's a free-for-all. You can work with anyone you want, you can have group discussions, you can have one-on-one discussions, whatever it takes, but you have to write in your own hands on your own paper. And your goal is to answer the test questions. Those questions which you answer in the blue pen, you get full credit for. Those questions which you answer in the red pen, or fractions of a question you answer in a red pen, you get half credit for. So, you know, you want to answer as much as you can in blue, but red works. And so, go. And I walked out of the room. And came back, gave them the new pens, walked out of the room. And the reason I walked out of the room was I wanted to give an environment where the students had the freedom to express their concerns, their uncertainties, and be honest with each other. And whereas in front of a professor, it can be somewhat humiliating or embarrassing. So I came back in after with a few minutes left in the class session to gather the pens and to just clarify any final questions. And I've walked into a lot of exam environments, and this was a unique experience, because in this environment, rather than being this kind of set of this kind of foreboding and heavy expectation and kind of handing something to a person knowing that it's like, you're the underling, kind of a set of, this kind of very unfortunate sense that comes out of many exam rooms, there was this excitement. The students really would not let me leave the room until I explained what was going on with this question, what was going on with that question, and resolved the debates that they've been having. There was this environment, this intense environment focused on ideas, focused on concepts, on the course, and everyone was in an up mood. They'd all been stimulated, And they also walked out of the room knowing where they were at. It wasn't going to be me indicating to them as a return test, this is who you are and what your value is. No, they knew, and they knew what they had to do. And so it took away the kind of very hierarchical structure of a typical course room and made them in control of their own educational experience. So all of that was kind of a watershed moment for me in terms of just saying, gosh, you know, we have all these minds in the classroom and we just are not using them to the full extent. And here's an opportunity to have people have a positive learning experience that takes advantage of the insights and enthusiasm that is intrinsic in a student environment. So that was the start of it.
Yeah, this sounds like a good opportunity for peer instruction as well. And the research tells us that when someone explains something to someone else, it reinforces in their mind what they're saying.
Yeah, well, that's a very good point. And there's two points embedded in that. Number one is that I know nothing about education theory. In a formal sense. And that was something that struck me, that when I started to then look into this, I said, well, what don't I know? And what can I learn? I realized that I'm just giving tests the way that I was giving those tests. And no one ever told me how to write a test or what the function is or how to make them better. But then when I looked into the literature, I was not very happy with what I found. Much of the literature ongoing is about how to touch a touch screen. And how to organize the questions on a vertical column and all this. It's like, wait a minute, this is very much in the box sort of stuff. And the technology, the notion of technology in teaching was very much about physical things. And technology is about ideas. Software is ideas, not physical stuff. And so I really realized that there had been a issue in my education, an issue in the concept of technology in education, and really a breakdown there. And so I was part of that. But you're right. The students teaching each other, that's a classic experience of a professor, right? That until you've taught it, you don't really know it. And that was one of the opportunities that these students who were on the cusp of really owning this information then had the opportunity to challenge that and to try to explain it. And they were as full of questions as were the students who needed the help. Because they had all of a sudden been challenged with what's this equation mean and why'd you get it and why is it right? And that then so created an environment where not only the weaker students had opportunity to learn, but the strongest students had their understanding challenged at a higher level. And that's I consider that to be a pretty positive outcome from a test.
Well, John, that's that when I look at the history of testing, educational testing, the points that you make seem to be very strong because here in the 21st century, we're using the same methodologies of basic concepts and motives of testing as assessment of knowledge that have been used for a couple hundred years. And I have some huge questions about whether we should be using our technology and our new abilities at all to implement basically a 19th century problem or a picture of, the way knowledge is formed. But you make two observations in your paper that seem to me to point to something way beyond the question of methodology, and it's the idea that test-taking is inherently humiliating. I should say that again. That two points of methodology. One is that you point to two ideas that are beyond the methodology of this. One is that test-taking is inherently humiliating, and you've addressed that to an extent. And the other is that test-taking has no perceived direct educational value. Can you address those two ideas, the idea of the humiliating aspect, is that just for the students, or does that include the instructor? And is the non-perceived direct educational value true for both as well?
Right. And I've given a lot of thought to both of those questions because on the one hand, a test and learning in general is a study in humility. We become humble to the fact that we don't know everything and that we understand that we will always have to learn more. And so part of learning is a humbling experience in a positive way. But that's quite distinct from and often gets confused with humiliation, which is becoming humble in such a way that it has negative repercussions on your self-image or your ability and interest to pursue a set of ideas. And so we need to, so sometimes it's the nuances that we get lost in. We know that being humble is critical to for students and professors. That's part of the educational experience. We have to be humble enough to look beyond what we know. But humiliation is not. And so I think that that is a distinction which I really think is important to make. And I think that it's that nuance and thinking about those nuances that leads us to better models for education. Now, in terms of what a test does for learning, clearly a test is important to motivate students to be able to get them to take the effort to synthesize ideas. Synthesizing ideas is hard. Sitting down and studying is hard. And oftentimes, a deadline or an event that's going to be a watershed moment is helpful in crystallizing people's ideas and getting them to that new level of depth. And so I think we'll all agree that having deadlines and having watershed moments in an educational process is helpful. Similarly, as a professor, having the ability to see what people have truly learned and be able to have that information so that you can modify how you teach and for future years and also change how you might continue to teach as a course progresses is very useful. So once again, we have a situation like the humble issue that there are real values in having tests, and that's why we do them. That's a very valuable thing. But the point is there's a lot of baggage. And so, you know, you can enjoy French cheese without becoming obese if you realize that you can only eat so much of it. And you can enjoy the benefits of having examinations without getting all the baggage of the humiliation. And that's kind of, you know, the goal here is to refine our thinking and make things that really focus on the positive aspects of a testing experience and try to identify how to eliminate the negative aspects that are unnecessary.
Have you started writing your exams differently since you implemented this two-pen technique?
You know, the funny thing is the answer is no. I don't write exams any differently. I use my standard format, standard exams. It turns out that my questions were pretty good, I think. I liked my questions. They covered the material of the course. And you know, if it's an easy question, then they all get around it and say, yeah, we all get that. Interestingly, sometimes the easy questions, someone will have a subtle point that I never or any other student never noticed because they were in such a hurry to get through it. But no, it hasn't required rewriting tests in format at all. The standard format works. I leave a little bit more space on the page.
It seems like this would be useful for formative assessment, too. Maybe you spend more time on certain topics?
Oh, yeah. No, from a teacher's point of view, it really points out, number one, how many people don't get a basic concept. And then the more profound observation at times is concepts that no one gets, and they all think they get. And so that really helped me be able to assess, gee, where is this class really at, and what's failing to get through, where do I have to put more effort? So for me, it's been very helpful readdressing, refocusing the course.
Well, and you've got it color-coded in red ink, too.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, it also, from the point of view of a professor, as I point out in the article, it really makes my job easier, which is the shocking thing, is that, you know, when things, it's like these simple ideas that sometimes make life better on all fronts. The tests come in essentially graded. Typically, when you get to the bottom of the red, the student has figured out what they did wrong, corrected it, and come up with the correct answer. And so 90% of the grading's done. I'm just assigning points. And this is, you know, takes much less of my time to grade a test, which on the one hand feels like cheating but actually there's no harm done. It was a better process to begin with.
Now, how do you tell the difference between the student finding and correcting their own error and simply getting it from somebody else?
Well, it has to be in their own hand. And they have to, and I don't allow simple writing down of equations. They actually have to write out, you know, the answer with sentences that describe what they're doing. So I'm in an engineering program, so they have to say, you know, and by this reason. Now, and the environment is not conducive to straight copying. You know, it's conversational. People are doing things, and there isn't that much time to simply just take someone's paper. So no one will just give them their other paper and let them just copy off it. It's a conversational mode, and I haven't seen that problem. So In theory, I suppose you could have it, but it's interesting that sometimes in practice, the problems that we anticipate don't occur.
So how does the grading part of this work, assigning points, you give full credit to the one color, the blue, and you half credit to the other. Right. Would you describe, because people do their scoring in different ways, can you explain how that full and half goes?
Yeah, I look at the problem and I assess what fraction of the problem was done in each color. So sometimes they do nothing, and it's all in red. Well, then you just mark it as if it was an original work in blue, but with red, and whatever amount you come up with, that's the grade. And then if you have a half and half, you'll say, okay, the first half was not right. Okay, you get 0 for the blue. And the next half was right, but it's only half the problem, so then you get half credit for half the problem, which would be quarter. So it's that sort of thing. Again, it's usually not, these problems are, they're concise. It's something you can do in a few minutes, the actual, work to be done. So it's not too complex typically for me to assign 5 points. You've got a 5 or 10 point question. So you have, 2 points for this part and 2 points for that part. And I will write down, that the red is 2 out of 3 times 0.5 is 1.5. Or 1 point in that case. So, I do the math right on their paper where they can see exactly what I've done.
So you mentioned that during the collaborative phase of the exam, students often find and correct their own mistakes. But how do you know that they're finding their own mistakes and the work isn't done by the person sitting next to them?
No one can do it for them. In the test environment, all the work has to be done with their own hand. There are cases where you say, gee, I wonder how much the student really understood what they've just written down. But at the end of the day, we have to decide what we're at, where we're at as professors. And my job is to provide the opportunity and the environment that will be educational. I'm not a policeman. I'm not really concerned overly about the fact that I might give someone credit for something they didn't actually in their mind, fully capture. If they've got the work there and they've been able to write it out, then I don't worry too much about policing.
Right, but that's what we're trying to get away from, is the idea of this humiliating hierarchy, which is I'm the cop and you're the student and I'm going to police you. This also opens the problem that so many students have with collaborative effort and collaborative learning is the red part all depends on who you collaborate with. So if you're on the lower end of the grading scale and you don't understand the work and you find the best communicative and the smartest people, you're going to do better. How does that work in the classroom?
Well, my classes, as it turns out, they're water resources engineering courses, and they tend to be smaller. The biggest classes I've used this in are about 20 students. And so I have not had a big problem. In the 20-student class, we do see some students benefit more greatly by being in teaming with a more well-prepared group. And I think that, learning to collaborate is not a bad skill set. So knowing what you know, knowing what you don't know, knowing who to go to, and helping break down some of those barriers between students about asking for help and giving help. Now, it's fraught with challenges for a very shy student, challenged by, taking advantage of this. That might also motivate them to prepare much more carefully for the test. If they know that they're not going to benefit from that, maybe there'll be some that really work harder. Also, perhaps, I saw a lot of reaching out. I saw students who, the shy students might be the very best students in the class. And so we see that students who were quiet and obviously got it all of a sudden became quite popular. And so they become, part of the conversation. And that's pretty nice, too. But, I'm sure it's not optimal. There's ways that this type of technique could be improved. And some students, there will be hiccups along the way. But my experience thus far has been fairly positive. The students have all indicated that it's a preferred technique. I haven't had anyone come back and say, I don't like this.
I'll bet. I can imagine a lot of variations of the multi-phase concept a collaboration is a very important part of yours, and given the classes that you have, it makes sense. A graduate level courses, a smaller class. But I could imagine a type of arrangement like this where one did the blue pencil on, you know, do your best work, and now open book for the red pencil. Or let's do the blue pencil, now let's have a discussion, and now do the red pencil. So there would be a whole bunch of possibilities of phasing elements of exam taking.
Yeah, and there's been a recent article that drew on mine called the buddy testing technique, and they had a slightly different variant of it. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, John, that there's opportunities to refine it for the particulars of your class. Because I published it in Physics Today, several people are trying to institute it in very large classes, these introductory physics classes. And that then means that they have to be more, I think, active in assembling groups and working with their space, because they often have 200 students in one area for taking a test. So how do you manage that? And that's going to require a little bit more structured approach, probably. I think it may be good that we develop and kind of vet some of these processes in the smaller classes, because as they roll out to bigger classes, it's nice to have a few of those kind of lessons under your in your repertoire. But in fact, at Michigan State, they're doing testing in large classrooms with this, and I've heard of other people. I got a lot of feedback from over email. It's certainly been, by the way, the article which I've gotten the most feedback from of all the articles I've written, and so that's been very gratifying. And people, you know, I think are hungry. Professors are hungry for something that better captures the opportunity presented by a test.
It's such an elegant and doable concept. It just strikes me. I'm amazed that I haven't run across it before, if nobody's done this before, it just really is incredible, John. I mean, there are other types of lessons where we lecture in a multi-phase format, or when we administer people using the response system clickers, I often teach them how to do that in a multi-phase format. But to apply this to exams is just remarkable. Have you considered doing any empirical research on the ways of measuring the persistent knowledge and the outcomes?
Well, you know, that's the beauty of collaboration in the broad sense, that, as I said, I really don't know the literature and the methods of evaluating tests and things like that. And so it was really exciting for me when the science education people at University of Michigan picked up on this and said, oh, we're going to do actual testing of it. And you see that article on buddy testing where they actually looked at metrics of performance and metrics of learning. And this is perfect because I really believe, you know, it takes a village to teach a student. And that's why I threw this out when I realized, you know, I'm going to play with this. I'm going to use it. But I bet other people will take it a lot further. And so that's what I'm really hoping for, is that people will play with it, write their articles, refine it, and maybe 10 years from now it'll be unrecognizable, and maybe something far better.
What advice would you give for other instructors who'd like to try this out?
Start with a simple exam that is that allows them to figure out the dynamics of their classroom. So don't just walk into a final this way. Eventually, I did give my final this way in two classes, and so it's been fine. It worked out. But I would say that start with a midterm and try to schedule as much time as you can. So you're not pressuring students to who won't have time to complete their conversation. So schedule enough time. So I would start simple, few questions, ample time, see how it goes, get the feedback. But that's the key. And, you know, with our scheduling nowadays, it is sometimes challenging to get that sufficient time to do this sort of thing. And I encourage professors to look into scheduling to be able to get the time to have a test be a positive experience.
So, John, your notion of an exam seems to me very important, the purpose and the value of having an exam at all. I think some people run into the problems with exams that you've pointed out and opt not to do exams. But you're pointing out a way in which an exam can be used as a positive experience. And it's so important for us to understand, because they're so widely used in all kinds, SATs and all these standardized exams, and just push the standardization, which is all exam-based, that we understand why we have the exams that we have, why we use the techniques that we use, and what they're supposed to be for, what problem is it supposed to solve educationally. It seems to me that your notion of the exam is a synthesis between humility in the experience and some direct educational value, or that the exam itself is a learning experience. And the synthesis between those two is, in a way, that humility is a kind of self-knowledge. So the student comes to learn what they know and what they don't know by measuring their knowledge against the instrument that you've provided. And then you give them the opportunity to move beyond that state by collaborating with someone else. And the end product is more than they brought with them, whether they're the brightest student in the class or the least prepared student in the class.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that, you know, the modern examination culture has walked us into an unfortunate place oftentimes, where exams are purely a one-way experience. You sit before a computer, you fill in what the computer prompts you to fill in, and you leave, and the student has gained nothing. It has in fact detracted from the educational process. Oftentimes you'll see the teach to the exam thing going on, where teachers are modifying their content, not because they think it's the most important, not because it's going to build the greatest intellect or preparation for world and life, but because it'll address this exam. These are things which I think we need to challenge. We need to challenge ourselves. Why are we giving these exams? And how can we give an exam that does both things? I guess what I'm saying is that we may have thrown the baby out with the bathwater with our testing concepts, in that by focusing entirely on one aspect, one use of testing, and that is to evaluate outcomes of what people have learned, we have in fact ignored the impact on the individual, the impact on the learning environment, and the feedback that a professor really needs to make sure that they are learning as they teach. And so I'm really advocating that as a culture, as here at Oregon State and as an educational community, we look at this and don't be satisfied with status quo, this is the way it is. There's a lot of cool things we can do that will make a better environment and yet satisfy those really important requirements of understanding how we are doing as a community. Are we getting to the place we'd like to be? I think that learning outcomes are important and we have to evaluate those. But that we can look for new models is an exciting opportunity, I think.
That's brilliant, John. The history of test making and test taking that I know in the United States has everything to do with the economics of testing. The economics, it's perceived as a quick and easy way to be able to get it done. And as we move into a technological era where we have the capability to do so much more on an individualized basis, we stay with the same 19th century factory model economic testing. And you're providing a way which you've described it as a win-win. And on the practical level, I think that really speaks to the problem. It's a win. How is it a win-win?
Yeah, well, we're going to invest a lot of effort into this thing, which we call a test. And we always want, the one outcome is to just have an evaluation of how is Peter, how has he been able to regurgitate this information. That would be a win, because now I know how Peter's doing, perhaps. But what if Peter left the room dejected? What if he then felt, he could no longer pursue this line of work, and really he had a stumbling block? That'd be a win-lose situation. What if I didn't know how to change my course? I didn't understand how there was a defect in the course that would allow me to address his issue next time or as we move forward. That would be a loss of potential information. So the win-win is that we use a testing opportunity to address our need to gain metrics of performance and learning, but we also use it to help the student advance their learning as they move forward. Now they know what they need to know. They know how to get there. They understand what it means to understand something. And we get the most we can in terms of the professor understanding, oh my gosh, this is what I need to do to make my students capture more fully the ideas that I want them to understand. So kind of win-win-win versus lose-win-lose. And I guess that, you know, that's what we need to look for. A point I'd like to make also about technology is that we're in an age when technology has been thrown at us at a really rapid pace for as a professor. And I think I speak for many, many professors who've gone through the transition between the chalkboard and the transparencies and the PowerPoint, and then somehow regressed back to the chalkboard. And I think that one of the things I liked about this testing procedure is it was low tech. It's very transparent. It's very tactile. You have a piece of paper. You've got colored pens. Everything is presented before you. There's no hidden pieces. There's no buttons that beep and things like that. No projectors to break. And I guess this is, to me, a lesson that we have to learn to not be wowed by technology. A piece of paper is technology. Use it wisely. Two colors of pen, that's technology. Use it wisely. And I think that part of what we have as a community have to do is help each other sort through these technologies to be able to identify those opportunities that really have power. And there are some incredible ones. I use numerical modeling in a lot of my classes, and the 3D visualization and all that stuff is just phenomenal. I mean, thank goodness for, you know, megabytes. But use that really strategically. And I think that, to me, that was one of the kind of lessons, was that one branch of testing was going down the high-tech megabytes, you know, touch panel screen type of thing. And, you know, it was shocking to me, or striking, that something as simple as a pencil and a piece of paper was really all that was required, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. We're exposed to lots of technologies, but we don't know which ones are worth investing our time in.
Well, it's going to be an interesting process as we, I think that we're at a very kind of pregnant time where the technology has matured to the point where there are some real opportunities, and the teaching community has matured to the point where they understand that it's not all gold. And so there, people really, I think, are ready to go to the next level and be more strategic in their selection and utilization of different technologies.
I'll make a prediction, John. I think that this simple idea that you have, that has so much power in it, is going to spread throughout Oregon State University and have a much broader influence. And I hope we get to be a part in disseminating that idea.
Well, that'd be cool. I hope you're right, John. And thanks again for taking the time to talk about this. And I'm really happy to help people as much as I can. But I hope that it is, in fact, useful.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts with our teaching and learning community.
Thanks for coming today.
My pleasure.
Thanks to you listeners as well, and we hope you'll join us next time for conversations and explorations of key teaching and learning issues. And remember,
teaching is learning, and learning is life.